Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. That guy's Sean O'Hara. I am John Schmelk, and we're taking your calls at 201-939-4513. The Giants obviously coming off a very disappointing 24-10 loss to the Minnesota Vikings on Monday Night Football. I want to get to your calls fast and furious today. We're going to do rapid fire, folks. I know a lot of people want to get in, talk about the game. So there'll be one comment, and then we're going to move on to the next caller, okay?
Quick therapy.
Yes, exactly. It's going to be rapid-fire therapy here on Giants.com on this Tuesday morning. But before we get to it, I want to address with Sean some of the topics I'm sure you're going to be calling in to talk to us about so we can maybe dig a little bit deeper after we get through some of the basics on the game here. All right, Sean, obviously a disappointing loss for the Giants, second straight loss, now tied for last place in the NFC East at 2-2 with the Redskins, tiebreakers. Technically probably in last place at 2-2. The game against the Vikings, in terms of it being an offensive struggle against a good Vikings defense, not so much of a surprise, but what was a surprise for me, where I thought the Giants had an advantage in this game, was outside. If they could isolate their wide receivers on those Vikings corners, they could make some plays. It didn't happen. My question for you is why?
Yeah, it's a great question. And when you look at the Giants' offense last year, they were averaging 26 points a game. And now to only muster up 10 points in this matchup, I really felt like they were never able to attack the middle of the field. And you mentioned hitting the outside. It seemed like a lot of the throws, and this offense really is designed for a lot of quick outs, a lot of slants. And really, once Larry Donnell went out of the game, there was nobody who attacked the middle of the field. And on the contrary, the Minnesota Vikings were attacking the middle of the field with Kyle Rudolph. And so they didn't have that offensive player. But I'm with you. I think that one of the most frustrating things for Giants fans today is to see this offense. Everybody's been talking about the triplets and Cruz and Sterling Shepard and Odell. To not see them be a factor in this game, not being able to take over the game and make big plays. There were a couple of drops in there. Victor had a drop. Odell had a couple of drops. But for Odell not to have a single catch in the second half and only three catches for 23 yards in the entire game, that's a head scratcher. And I thought for as many times as they threw the football, the O-line actually protected Eli. He had to move around a little bit, showed a little pocket movement. It was almost Brady-esque at times. But this team really right now, we don't know who they are. Are they a team that won the first two games by playing smart football, finding ways to make big plays offensively and defensively, get off the field? Or are they the team that 2 weeks in a row now have found ways to lose football games by turning the ball over, committing bad, timely penalties, being bad in the red zone, and really offensively to go 2-for-12 on third down is inexcusable. And I think going into the game against the Vikings, you knew two things offensively. We've got to take care of the football. We've got to stay in third and short. 8 of the 12 third downs were 7-plus yards. You cannot expect to win the game on the road like that.
I want to dig a little bit deeper into this offense, Sean, because I think we're seeing a pattern emerge. And I asked Victor Cruz about this after the game in the locker room. And I talked to him about how defenses are playing the Giants. And he said what you said. What the Vikings did in this game was play a lot of guys deep, play a lot of zone, don't let them get you over the top. And the one chance the Giants did, Beckham couldn't hand onto the ball with Newman grabbing his offhand.
Yeah.
Is that a pattern we're seeing that teams are saying, you know what, we're not going to give the Giants the quote-unquote easy points. They're not going to get those big plays down the field. We're going to make sure that they have to matriculate down the field, use 10 plays, use 11 plays. And you know what, our bet is that the Giants at some point are going to shoot themselves in the foot, and they're not going to be able to score that touchdown if we don't give them the big play. Is that what you're seeing too?
It is, and this is a copycat league. So guess what? If you lose a game because of that, even if the other team wasn't thinking that's how they're going to play you, they're going to do that because
right.
They want to know, can you put the fire out? And we used to talk about it as an offensive line all the time. If you get burned by a blitz in one game, you can go to the bank. You're going to see that blitz the next week because they're watching film, and they're saying, okay, you got burned by the nickel Sam Mike blitz. We're going to know if you figured it out. Have you corrected your mistakes? So the fact that the Giants can't seem to beat a team when they play soft shell coverage, when they play two high safeties, when they play a lot of zone, because they didn't really play a lot of man. And I think it's a show of respect, really, when you look at what the Vikings did by not playing man. They said, look, we respect your offense enough. We're going to make you beat us running the football, which is why there was early success by Orleans Darkwell, because there were six guys in the box. The Vikings were begging them to run the ball because they were so protective of giving up the big play. And that's really what other teams are going to look at. They're going to say, we're going to do the same thing. Until you prove to us that you can beat us by running the football, to your point, a 10-play drive, staying on the field, completing third downs, converting third downs, and scoring touchdowns in the red zone, until you can break that trend, you're going to see the same thing week in and week out. And I think to add on that, on what you were asking Victor Cruz, I think defenses are looking at this offense saying they go down the field a little bit with Odell Beckham, but a lot of these pass plays are within 10 yards. So guys are jumping on routes. The Minnesota Vikings did a great job of buzzing their linebackers who were mugged at the line of scrimmage, buzzing them out at the snap, and they were taking away the throwing lanes that Eli usually throws the slants to. So they took away the slant to Sterling, the slant to Odell, and the slants to Victor Cruz. They were basically a non-factor in this game because of what the defense was doing.
And, you know, to me, Sean, the turning point in this game, and it's odd for a turning point to come so early, but for me it did, and I'd like to know your opinion on it as well. But to me, this game changed. The Giants get the ball to start the game. Vikings won the toss. They deferred. And Dwayne Harris had a great kickoff return, got it almost to midfield, and then the Giants got it into Viking territory. They punt from the 38-yard line, and the Vikings get the ball on their own one.
And it was a great punt, too.
Great punt.
And it bounced on, like, the 5 or the 4-yard line, and Dwayne Harris was right there to down it.
And the defense does a great job, makes them go 3 and out.
Yeah.
The Vikings are going to punt. The Giants were going to get the ball back. They were going to have great field position. Dwayne Harris muffs the punt. It gives the Vikings back the ball in Giants territory, turns into a touchdown. It destroys the field position battle, which is what the Vikings want to do to win these games. They play that old Bill Parcells football, play defense, field position, and it put the Giants behind, which eventually, when they went down 2 touchdowns, eliminates your ability to be more balanced on offense, which is what you talked about before.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that you want to do playing Sam Bradford is you want to make him uncomfortable.
Right.
You want to put the pressure on Sam Bradford. That's exactly what that would have done. They would have gone 3 and out. Now if the Giants find a way to get points on the board, even if it's just a field goal, now you're putting pressure on Sam Bradford to make the plays. And coming into this game, let's be honest, the Minnesota Vikings offense wasn't a juggernaut.
31st in the league.
3 touchdowns offensively through 3 games. They had three scores on defense and special teams coming into it. So they weren't exactly lighting it up. And I think – you know, that's really what was frustrating to watch for Giants fans, I'm sure, because coming into the game, the Vikings had the worst rushing yards per game average in the NFL. They were averaging 51 yards per game. And at halftime, they had 66 yards on the ground. So for the Vikings, it was, you know, that's how you want to try to beat them. You want to put pressure on Sam Bradford, make him try to throw from behind. And I thought that was a big momentum swinging play. I'm with you on that. That muff punt. You could feel, you know, the momentum go all to their side. And then the Giants defense came out, and they were tired. You know, I thought that was a big play. And then I also thought, you know, there's something to be said for scoring points right before the half. And while the Giants got a field goal out of it, I really thought they missed a great opportunity to possibly come away with a touchdown right before the half with the poor clock management in the second quarter. And they had to burn a bad timeout. Because they were going no huddle, which there's no excuse to have to burn a bad timeout at that point in time. But they were at the line. They had to burn the timeout on 3rd and 10. Then they come back. There's 25 seconds to go in the game, I believe. And they throw the pass to Victor Cruz. Now, if they called timeout as soon as Victor Cruz got up from that, there would have been 19, maybe 20 seconds to go in the game. And now you could take a couple shots at the end zone. Maybe you get a 50-50 ball or maybe a fade, maybe something.
And so they snapped it with 10 seconds. They threw an incomplete pass, and then they only had 6 seconds left to try the field goal.
Yeah, so they basically lost 14 seconds in there by not calling the timeout. That was poor play. And then they decide to go the field goal, and Josh Brown's taking his sweet time to get lined up. And, you know, everybody's saying, well, the holder's got to be aware. Well, the holder is looking at the kicker. He's got his finger down, and I'm looking at the kicker waiting for him to tell me I'm ready, and then I go ready for the snap. So I don't know what they were doing on the sideline. Somebody should have been watching the clock because they should have called timeout. They get a delay of game.
Right. That's the
that
thing that
5
gets
yards
me.
could have been a missed field goal.
If it takes extra time, whatever, I get it. But you have a timeout left.
Yeah.
You got to get that timeout in before the delay of game gets called.
Yeah, somebody fell asleep at the wheel on the sideline for that. you know, luckily they were able to make the field goal even after they backed it up. Right. But it was just it was a glimpse into the fact that there are some things that they've got to find a way to clean up.
All right, I want to touch on one thing on the defensive side of the ball before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. And again, I want to make sure that we get to your calls. We'll get to as many as we can. We're going to go rapid fire today, be fast and furious, all right? So defensively, you said you want to put pressure on Sam Bradford. Pro Football Focus had their grades come out. They had Olivier Vernon grade out as having a good game. He had one quarterback hit, I think, five or six pressures. That being said, given the issues the Giants had in the secondary yesterday with all the injuries, and again, injuries aren't an excuse. Every team has them. But given that factor, given the fact that the Vikings starting left tackle is on IR, they lost their starting right tackle in the first quarter to an injury. So they had a second-year player at left tackle who's barely played there in his career. You had a guy who started one game in his career at right tackle. Did you think that Bradford was under enough duress over the course of the game for this defense to be effective given the limitations they had?
Yeah, absolutely not. He was way too comfortable. And you know what? The Giants only had two quarterback hits the entire game. So not only was he comfortable in the pocket, you know, you got to knock Sam Bradford down. Sam Bradford, you know, knowing his track record too with injuries, you've got to remind him of that, and you've got to find a way to get hits on him and knock him down and beat him around. And, you know, one of the ways you do that is you stop the run. Mm-hmm. Now you get him into third and long. You have to earn the right to rush the passer. And they didn't do that. They didn't stop the run. They gave up 104 yards on the ground, you know, to the entire Vikings offense. But they didn't get the pressure there. And then they put Steve Spagnuolo in a little bit of a quandary because he's without Eli Apple. Without DRC, he's dressed, but he's an emergency guy. So you have your two starting corners are down, and you want to bring pressure, but you don't want to put your guys on an island. Now you've got some backup corners in there. You don't want to put them at risk and give up the big play.
Right.
So he had to be sparingly dial up pressure. Even when the Giants brought pressure, they didn't get home.
Yeah, I think it was one out of 11 plays where they brought five or six guys. They actually pressured the quarterback, which is a problem.
Yeah, that showed up, you know, and I think for the Giants' defense, really, what we've seen, polar opposites. During the two wins,
right,
weeks one and week two, the Giants' defense gave up three big plays over 20 yards combined, just three. In the last two losses, they've given up 11. So it's a completely different defense right now. There's injuries there, but you know what? There are injuries across the board. You've got to find a way to win. And the Giants, they've got to find a way to stop giving up the big plays. Mm-hmm. And they certainly, given how much money they spent this offseason, have to find a way to get pressure from just the front four.
And remember, I mean, the Vikings aren't stupid. They know about the Giant injuries. So if they see Trevon Wade out there one-on-one without safety help, guess what?
Yeah,
they're going there.
Him. Yeah. And they did a good job to you know, using Kyle Rudolph because he's a big target, and anytime you have him one on one, you know, as soon as they had him one on one, they were going with the fade route. They found him in the end zone. You know, Sam Bradford looked pretty good, but for the Giants defense, they've got to find a way to create some turnovers. They still don't have a turnover through 4 weeks, which is absurd.
It really is absurd. There really isn't any other word for it. I think I'll look it up. I'm not sure how many of their teams in the NFL are with them in terms of not having a defensive takeaway. In fact, Detroit is the only other team in the NFL that only has one takeaway. I don't know if that takeaway came on defense or on special teams like the Giants won. But assuming it was a defensive takeaway, the Giants are the only team in the league right now without a defensive takeaway. So that's a problem. And finally, before we get to your calls, I want to get to the other elephant in the room. Your take on the Beckham thing, because that's all the talk I heard on the radio coming in this morning. NFL Network had it on the morning football show. Just your take on the whole thing. What's going on with him? Is it affecting the team? What he needs to do to kind of get away from this stuff? What he said after the game? Just give me your take on it.
You know, I call them wide redivas because they're always bringing some sort of drama around. This is pretty typical for some wide receivers, but I think the one thing that 2 weeks in a row now we've seen is Odell just get rattled, and he just kind of he becomes unraveled, and you can't let that happen. And I think, you know, so many defenses now know that, hey, he's somebody you can get to. And so now they're going to goad him. They're gonna try to lure him into some dumb penalties. You know, I thought the referees were a little quick on the flag trigger last night.
I did not like the unsportsmanlike call. In fact, I thought what he did on the subsequent play, lowering his shoulder into the guys out of bounds, was worse than what he did for the play he got flagged on.
Well, and they didn't call Xavier Rhodes on that either. My feeling is, if you're going to call a flag on Odell for that play, the next play you've got to call a flag on Xavier Rhodes. Mm-hmm. You know, call it both ways. If you're going to call a tight game like that, I get it, but you got to be consistent.
I agree with that. And by the way, that flag on the unsportsmanlike came
really late.
The back judge. It came from 30 yards down the field.
Now, he had to be careful because it looked like he was about to bump the referee, which is an automatic ejection. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's a passionate guy, and that's fine. But you know what? There's at some point in time you've got to realize that you put the team above yourself. And I think the one thing that I'll say about Odell Beckham is anytime – it starts becoming more about you and not the team, now you're going down a bad road. And for Odell, I know he wants to help his team win, and I know he gets frustrated when he's not involved in the offense, when he's not making an impact. And I get that because, let's be honest, he is the spark plug for this team. He is the emotional spark plug on offense. When he starts getting catches, you could feel the energy start to morph on offense.
Yeah, the team needs him.
They absolutely need him, and they need him to produce. They need him on the field. So knowing that, and knowing that you are under the microscope from the referee standpoint, from the defensive standpoint, that they're coming at you, you've got to be stoic, and you've got to say, look, I'm gonna let my pads do the talking. You know, just like in his commercial, he says shoulders are meant for greatness. Well, guess what? Your play is what's gonna speak about that, and not the jabber in between plays. It's from whistle to whistle what you do. And I don't think what he did last week on the sidelines in Washington, I don't think that was a distraction. But when you start getting penalties, because those penalties hurt your team, now it's becoming an issue.
I agree. 201-939-4513. All right, let's get to the phone calls, folks. Again, we're going to be rapid fire today. Want to make sure we get everybody in. And by the way, the Lions was a defensive takeaway. That was a Glover Quinn interception. Thank you, Dave Dominic, our producer. So the Giants are the only team without a defensive takeaway this year. Hard to win games
when
that's the case. 201-939-4513. Let's do it. Jason in Maine is up first here on Giants.com. Jason, how are you?
Good. How about you guys?
Doing well, Jason. What's up?
Well, I'm good as I can be after that game.
I hear you.
Just two questions for you. One, I'm concerned about the safeties, just having enough bodies to get out there, for one. And I just read where they're trying some guys out this weekend. Was wondering, is there anybody in that list that you guys saw that could possibly help New York at that position?
Well, Jason, I got to be honest. The team does not publish who comes in for workouts, so we really can't talk about any names. I think the hope is that Berhe gets out of concussion protocol, Sean, this week, which will certainly help. But I think even more so than the safeties, Jason, I think you got to get one of these two corners back. And I think that's very important to get DRC and or Apple back on the field before they play the Packers next
week. Yeah, and I think Leon Hall in a pinch could probably move back to safety. He played safety with the Bengals for a number of years. You know, I was a little intrigued, though, when I saw Dante Whitner's name pop up last week as somebody they worked out with. I think, if they were in dire straits and absolutely needed a body, I think they could have signed Dante Whitner. You know, who knows? Roll is out there, and we know he's always in shape, so they could always plug him in there, and he knows this defense well. But I think, to your point, that getting the corners back. And Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, he dressed. He was active. So that tells you that he's pretty close, and he was there in emergency. He didn't really play, but it is a short week. They are traveling on the road, and it's a very big concern when you're playing Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. You know, call it a hunch. He's going to throw the ball, and they're going to be a lot of double moves. So this secondary, they're going to need some help. They're going to need healthy bodies. They're going to need their track shoes because they're going to be running.
Okay. My other question is just for you, Sean. In watching Eric Flowers, he seems to get a lot of penalties, and I'm just wondering, do you know what it is about his game right now that's causing him to struggle in that way? And I'll just take that off the air. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks for the question, and thanks for calling in. I think it's very simple when it comes down to Eric Flowers, and it's something that plagued him last year. It plagued him in college, and it's his hands. You know, he looks like Yogi Berra out there because – Yogi Bear is just hugging guys, you know. How about a hug? The hands are outside, and that's why he gets in trouble. Anytime your hands are outside, you're going to get called for holding. And until he fixes that, he's going to be liable for a penalty. He's good for one a game right now. That's basically what it is. Now, when I watch film, he could easily be called three or four times. So they're letting some of that go. But I have seen him progress. He looks better now than he did in the preseason. In the preseason, he wasn't punching at all. He was purely grabbing. Now he's getting a little more comfortable. He's throwing his hands better. But he's got to get his hands tight. And I think, you know, you could still get called for holding with your hands tight. But if you get outside the framework and you're out here on the shoulder, you're going to get called for holding. That's something that he has to correct. And it's really just it's a mental thing, because I know it's something that his O-line coach, Mike Solari, works on. I know Pat Flaherty worked on it last year, and it's something that he has to willingly correct.
I will say this, though. Only one tackle for Everson Griffin. No quarterback hits. No hurries. So
he battled. Good job. The one thing that two things impressed me, Eric Flowers. Last year, he battled through an ankle injury. A lot of guys probably would have shut it down. So he's very tough, and he's very strong. That's why it's so frustrating to see him, because he's got all this talent, all this potential. He could be a great left tackle if he just cleaned up a couple of the techniques. And I think when he gets his hands on people and his hands are inside, he can move them. He can do a better job in the run game. But his pass blocking, it has grown by leaps and bounds compared to what he was last year. They do throw the ball a lot, so he's getting a lot of reps. But I thought he handled himself rather well, especially in the noise, because that place was rocking. You were there.
Oh, yeah, and then this was the first time he's really faced what I would consider an elite pass rusher this year at that left tackle position. And you're right. I took my headphones off up in the radio booth at that game yesterday, and you couldn't hear a damn thing.
Yeah, and Griffin is coming off three sacks from the week before. So, you know, it's something that he can correct.
And you know what's funny? A lot of people are really worried about the offensive line in this game. If you really look at the list of the reasons the Giants lost this game, the offensive line is nowhere near the top of the list. They actually did a pretty darn good job. And I thought Eli at times maybe looked a little bit rushed and jittery when he didn't have to be.
Yeah, you could tell his clock was accelerated.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a lot of times where, boy, that first guy wasn't open. He was skipping the rock. And the ball was just bouncing off the turf. At one point in the game, he had more balls thrown into the grass than to an actual receiver. And you know what? We heard it even after the game in his interview. He talked about they brought a blitz a couple of times, and he wasn't sure if he was picked up. So I think one of the things that happens is with Minnesota, they run a lot of double A-gap mug linebacker looks. Now, they don't always blitz them. They fly them out of there. But what that does is that takes the chip off of your tackles, because now the running back has to respect that linebacker in the A-gap. He's got to come up to meet him. And if that linebacker drops, well, basically what you did was you took that running back chip off of for the left tackle or the right tackle. So now you're one-on-one. And I think that's when Eli sees that as a quarterback, you know, all right, if I've got that double A-gap, I'm losing the chip. I've got to really get this ball out quick.
201-939-4513, Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go back to the calls. Rick in Tampa Bay, he's up next. Rick, how are you?
Guys, how are you? You know, I'm going to start from the top to the bottom. And first of all, yes, the offensive line is the least of our problems right now. They played a fairly decent game, I thought, last night. But you want to start right from the top. And I spoke to Paul Tatino last week about the penalties being a problem with the coach, losing a little bit of a grip on this team. And he said, well, they had seven in the first couple of games, and I agreed with him on that. But I'm starting with the coach down, the penalties that the team is doing, and the ball control and the focus, and these timeout management is not good. And I'm starting to lose a lot of confidence in the coaching. You go down to the defense, all this money we spent, and these guys can't get a sack. It's ridiculous. And we're not playing, you know, yes, you know, offensive line for Dallas, but we're not playing, you know, offensive lines that are super, super.
That's
to
true.
Have that happen is ridiculous. And and again, the cornerbacks, yes, they're out, but again, I know injuries are a problem, but the Giants' hamstrings and groins, it happens every single year, and it's happening again. We're missing guys. We're putting in guys who get burned and who play terrible, and. And then you got our number one receiver is a head case, and it's proven 2 weeks in a row he is acting ridiculous, and it's costing the team. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, he's dropping balls. Oh my God, Victor Cruz again, drop a ball. This guy drop a ball. There's his chance for his one hand catch, and he misses it. The one hand catch he makes, he dropped the easy one. I'm getting frustrated. I'm really starting to think we're losing control here. Aaron Rodgers is not Sam Bradford. I'm worried about this game. I think we got to win two out of the next three games. All of a sudden, the Ravens are tough. Look at the Rams. We got to play them. They're actually good. We thought that was a pushover when we looked at the schedule in the beginning of the season. So I'm venting. Thank God I got to go on the phone. I appreciate your time. I'm here in Tampa. I mean, at least Jameis Winston and these guys are 1-3, so I don't have to hear them. But you know what? They're in a worse situation, but we need to get two out of three in the next game. But everything I just said concerns me and every other Giants fan. I mean, come on, Odell. Get your head out of your butt. This is ridiculous. Something's got to change. He's got to start thinking about catching the ball and stop getting – because they're going to pick on him. They're going to push him. They're going to say things, and he's not handling it 2 weeks in a row. And come on, coach. Show like you know what you're doing there. These timeouts, I mean, I was yelling too. This is ridiculous.
Thank
Come
you,
on,
Rick.
Appreciate it,
my friend.
It.
Good stuff. Anything you want to cherry pick from that call that you want to comment
well,
on?
Well, Rick mentioned he's in Tampa, so I hope he's doing all right. It seems like 2 weeks in a row now they've had to halt the game down there because of
some lightning
and thunderstorms. So I hope everybody's safe down there. You know, I'll say that, hey, Rick, Goose Fraba. I get it.
A little Bad Boys 2 reference there.
Yeah, that's this is a frustrating time, and – you know, the crazy thing is when the Giants were 2-0, everybody was talking about how, wow, this is going to be a good year. And now the sky is falling. So, you know, I think it's important to take pause. And I think one of the things that you always do, this is kind of the quarter pole, all right? And the Giants really right now, this next game is going to determine a lot about this season and who they're going to be, what team we have. Because they've been Jekyll and Hyde. And I think the first 2 weeks – they did a much better job, obviously, than these last 2 weeks. But it's how do you respond? And they're challenged this week because they just got home at 4 a.m. It's a short week. You turn right around, go back on the road. So they're leaving on Saturday. Basically, in 4 days, they're going to be on a plane getting ready to go play another game. So you don't have time to sulk about it. You know, I think the one thing that Rick brought up was the penalties. And I don't blame Ben McAdoo for the penalties. He's not committing the penalties.
No.
He's not the guy holding. He's not the guy committing pass interference. The unsportsmanlike conduct on Odell Beckham, we already addressed that one. You know, that's just a maturity thing. You know, as a coach, you're really hamstrung. What do? Do you bench the guy? Do you pull him out? Do you fine him? Sure, you could do those things. But to me, it's on the players. Your name is on the back of the jersey. Yeah, you're playing for the NY that's on the front and on the helmet. But at some point, you've got to have some respect for yourself as a pro and say, I don't want my name called out. I don't want to commit a penalty because I don't want to hurt the team. I don't want to let down the guy to my right and my left. And I think this is a very crucial time for the veteran players on this team to really take control. Take control of the locker room. Stop beating themselves. Eliminate the poor play. Bruce Arians, he was my offensive coordinator when I played for the Browns. And I loved B.A. I loved playing for him. He was a straight shooter. He didn't take any crap. But one of the things that he did every practice, when we came off the practice field and we met as an offense before we reviewed the practice tape right there that same day, he would post a list, John, on the overhead projector. And it would show it up there. And if you had a mental error or a penalty, you were on that list in front
of
everybody. And, you know, guys would kind of bristle when they saw your name up there. But I tell you what, it provided accountability.
You know, Belichick does stuff like that, too. He calls out all those mistakes
Absolutely.
In the team meeting.
And I think you have to call these guys out. And you do it because you want people to be accountable. You're not trying to embarrass anybody. But I'll be damned if I was going to look up there and see my name up there. Because I didn't want anybody in that room to look over me and say, hey, he's the dumb you-know-what, and he's the reason why we're losing. So
wow.
To me, there's a way to fix this and a way to make the players own up to it. You put them on blast, and you show them up there. Coach Coughlin would have low lights, and he would show, instead of highlights after a loss, low lights, and he would say, these are some plays that we've got to make. I know you can make this play, but by showing it, everybody's on the same page. And it's almost kind of a debriefing, if you will, which they actually used offensively a couple of years ago to kind of air some things out. This is the time when you have to do it. Now it's tough to do it on a short week, but when the team comes in on Wednesday, they've got to debrief, they've got to see that, and then they've got to move past it.
All right, I want to get to one Twitter question this show, and I think this is a good one because I've seen other fans complaining about this as well. I'd love to get your take on it, Sean. From the aptly named Angry Giants fan at Capital P, the Giants called a terrible game on the offensive and defensive sides of the ball. Both coordinators lacked any aggression. Your thought on the general complaint, I think it's out there, that the offense isn't going down the field enough and the defense isn't bringing enough pressure.
Offensively, you can never dictate coverage. You really have to take what the defense is giving you. And you addressed it before that the defense was playing a lot of soft coverage. They were playing off. They were playing a lot of cover three, a lot of quarters, a lot of two high. So they were basically taking the big play away. Mm-hmm. Now, there were a couple times where they had a chance to take a shot, and they did, and Odell didn't come down with the catch. So from that standpoint, I get it. You can't be super aggressive down the field. But here's where I sense the frustration, because I found myself watching this game saying, why aren't they doing more of this? Why aren't they doing more of that? You know, when I turn on the film of the Atlanta Falcons, everybody in the building knows Julio Jones is getting the football.
But yet
he has 300 yards receiving. So they're finding a way to get Julio open. Now, what is Kyle Shanahan doing down in Atlanta? He's using a lot of trips formation, and now you do a bunch. Mm-hmm. You do a little cluster formation. And now you can kind of hide Julio Jones. So I'm shocked that we haven't seen that. We haven't seen much trips formation.
Yeah, we've seen almost exclusively
it's 2x2.
Odell and Cruz outside with Shepard in the
right
slot. That, and so, you know, occasionally you see Beckham go in motion and stuff like that. But
yeah, but I didn't even see a lot of that. You know,
right.
I see a lot, you know, week in and week out on Sundays, I see a lot of wide receiver screens where they run, you know, they set trips right formation and they run the two outside receivers on go routes to clear it out. And the third receiver runs an out, or they bring somebody across. There can be more creativity, and I think that's where McAdoo has to find a way to move Odell Beckham, get him in the slot, because he was lined up outside. And you know what? When you line up a guy outside, he's easy to double cover because now you can put the safety over the top. But you've got to start attacking the middle of the field, and I thought that's where the Vikings were vulnerable last night. That's where the Giants missed a lot of good opportunities by not attacking the middle of the field, because when you have two high safeties, the linebacker is the one that has to handle that deep middle. And that's where they could have created some mismatches. So certainly some frustration on that point. You know, and for McAdoo, you know, listen, this is a big test for him. I think there's some new challenges for him being a first-time head coach, because he's wearing both hats now. He's the offensive coordinator and the head coach. Guess what? There's only so much time in the day. So he's got to really do a good job of figuring out what he's going to do going forward.
All right, I'm going to get to your calls the rest of the way at 201-939-4513. By the way, Eli missed Shepard in the middle of the field on one of those early drives, too,
bad
for
throw.
A first down. Yeah,
almost like the ball slipped out of his hand.
It came out very funny. Wobbly, absolutely. Then on
one
of the final drives, he looked for Shepard on one of those slants, and it got deflected at the line of scrimmage on one of the final drives in the fourth quarter. Chris in Syracuse, he's up next, and he wants to talk about Eli Manning and his performance. Chris, how are you?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Go ahead, Chris.
That's good. All right, good to talk to you, Sean, for the first time. I wanted to come in. I got a whole bunch of points, so I'm just going to make them real quick.
Yeah, real quick, Chris. I'm trying to get to as many people as possible.
Yeah, I hear you. Eli there, I just want to kind of defend him a little bit, because it just seems like craziness with the Giants fans. Everybody's like, a lot of my buddies and online, they're just kind of roasting this dude. And my thought is, I thought he played – I'm not going to sit here and say Eli's at the top I've ever seen him, but I think he was playing all right last night. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was coached here. Get rid of the ball. You saw what happened when Cam Newton was trying to hold on to that ball the week before. Mm-hmm. If we knock Eli out, we're in a lot worse shape than we're in right now. The bottom line is the receivers aren't getting open. And the TV guys, even Aikman, I don't think was really helping that. You go back to Washington, and they're showing this clip here, and they're showing Odell waving his hand up in the air, and they're going, oh, Eli just missed Odell. He was open. No, he wasn't. Norman covered him. Eli went to Shepard in the slot, and Norman broke off the route and was going at Shepard at the time. So some of that stuff I think is just getting a little misleading. And I think the two-time champ knows how to run the offense and play the game. I just think it's crazy for people to be turning on him that quickly. And the second point real quick is over the summer, John, you and I were talking, and I was saying that I thought Trevon Wade made a lot of plays for us last year, and nobody was calling his name out. He wasn't getting the attention that he deserved. And I'd just say I'm sorry that I said that, because apparently he got a whole kinds of attention that I didn't care for last night. So
thank you, Chris.
That's it, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it. Thoughts on Eli?
Trevin Wade had a rough night, you know. But I'll say this: he fought, and he was competing his butt off. You know, it was an ideal situation for him. But I think Trevin Wade will be okay. I think he'll bounce back from this.
I mean, he's usually a slot corner, too. They had him play him outside last night, too, which is something he's not generally that used to doing.
Yeah, he was a little bit outside of his comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But going back to the Eli stuff, I'm with you. And look, before this debacle and really even going back to last week with Washington, they had a chance to win the game. You know, and Eli, he had two interceptions that, you know, he'd love to have back. But I think Eli is still playing some of his best football. Now, the ball coming out quick, part of that, I think, is this offense. That's how it's designed. And when you look at the last 3 years, the ball is coming out faster every single year. This year, I think the ball is coming out in 2.3 seconds, which is one of the fastest in the NFL.
Yeah, I can look that up, actually. I'll check it out.
PFF has him ranked as one of the fastest. It's certainly the fastest of his career. So I think from that standpoint, Eli's doing a good job. He's getting the ball out. But – the thing is, when you go into Minnesota, they didn't huddle the entire game. I think they were in no huddle almost the entire time. Mm-hmm. So now what you're doing is you're asking your quarterback to have to orate the plays at the line, and they're using signals. And, you know, you're using one-word commands. You have keywords and code words for certain plays. But, you know, that's a lot to ask a quarterback to do at the line of scrimmage all the time for the entire game.
Especially with that noise, by the way.
Yeah, the noise was I'm sure, deafening.
Eli, by the way, Sean, third quickest in the NFL, 2.38 seconds to throw the football.
Yeah, so, I mean, that ball's coming out pretty quick.
Only Breeze and Fitzpatrick are quicker.
As an O-lineman, I love that.
I'm sure you do.
The ball's coming out quick. I'm not worried about him back there burping the baby.
Burping the baby? I shouldn't even be patting the football?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That is going to make any offensive line look a lot better, too. But the thing that has to be frustrating for Eli is the drop passes. You know, I mean, when Eli threw the interception, the third down and 10, on first and 10, he threw it a little quick out to Odell Beckham, and he hit him right in the hands. He dropped it. So now it's second and 10. They run the football. They get 2 or 3 yards. And now you're in third and 7.
That's what the Vikings want you in.
And you're playing right into their hands. So now Eli feels like he has to force a throw. You know, there was a 3rd and 3 that I thought Eli could have tried to get the first down instead of taking the deep shot. But – you know, I think there are times, too, where Eli feels like he's got to press and he's got to make a big throw. He trusts his receivers to win one-on-one, but they weren't playing a lot of man. So he didn't really have a lot of those back shoulder fade throws that Eli does so well. I think, you know, when you go no huddle like they did the entire game, you basically have a vanilla offense, because by going no huddle, you're not swapping out receivers, so you don't have fresh legs. And you're basically staying in that same formation like we talked about. They were in 2x2. They were in 11 personnel the entire game. And when Larry Donnell went out, now basically they couldn't go 12 personnel because they didn't have two tight ends. Mm-hmm. So it was all on Will Tye. That, I think, kind of handcuffed Eli as far as what he could really do.
All right, back to the phones. LaVon, he's in Atlanta. LaVon, you're up next. How are you, buddy?
Hey, John, how you doing? I got a quick comment about the game, and then I want to talk about Larry Donnell.
Go ahead.
Minnesota caught us at the perfect time. I mean, we were decimated. The defense, when you're down to your fourth corner and your third free safety, you're not going to get much pressure when the quarterback doesn't have to hold the ball for more than his first, maybe even his second read. So that's why it was no sacks. They got to work together, and the secondary was just – it wasn't prepared. They were confused. They looked like they didn't know who was going in and out. I don't know if Andrew Adams knows all the calls or can get people lined up like DT probably could have. I think the offense played badly, but Eli had no confidence that the blitz was going to get picked up. You got the rookie back there who got blown up by Anthony Barr on one play, and then you got Darkwood, and he looked unprepared. But I want to talk about Donnell. Mm-hmm. I think that experiment needs to be over. I never played professional football or basketball, but in playing sports, it's a general rule that if you play a sport, any sport, and you go out there and you are not physically able or just prepared to do what they ask you to do, you are either going to get yourself hurt or you're going to get someone else hurt. And when you stand up in the middle of the field when you're trying to block and you're standing up straight and you get blown up like he did against Anthony Barr, I hope he's okay, but I mean, I think that experiment needs to be over. He cannot block, And even when on offense, I mean, he's had issues catching the ball, and he gets upended, he lands on his head, he drops the ball a lot. He's not an NFL tight end. In my opinion, my amateur opinion, I think Ty needs to start. I think the Adams kid needs to be brought along, and that has to stop because that play was dangerous. He hurt himself, obviously. He's going to get somebody else hurt eventually, and that needs to be done. And I'll take it off there, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, LaVon. All right, Sean, your thoughts on Larry Donnell.
You know, the one thing that I feel like Larry Donnell has always struggled with is what does he do after he catches the ball?
Leaves his feet.
He either jumps or he falls down.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that has always perplexed me whenever I watch him is why does he always struggle with the ball, like once he makes the catch? And, you know, and that is when he does make the catch because there's been a number of times where he has dropped the ball and it's – you know, it reared its head in week two. You know, he had a touchdown down in the end zone against the Saints that he dropped. You know, I think the tough thing for the Giants right now is, you know, you can't just not play Larry Donnell because now William Tighe is going to have to be your guy throughout the whole season. So they're really kind of handcuffed right now. I'm with you. I think one of the glaring needs this offseason was a tight end. Was a game changer, somebody that could be a factor. And when you look at what the Washington Redskins have in Jordan Reed, when you look at the Philadelphia Eagles with Brent Celek and Zach Ertz, when you look at Jason Witten, you know, I mean, these guys are weapons. These aren't just tight ends that you bring in the block and you throw the ball to them every once in a while just to keep them happy. These guys are game changers, and I think that's something that the Giants definitely need, you know, especially when you're playing a defense like the Vikings. And what we talked about they were doing, they were basically taking away the outside throws. You need somebody across the middle. You need a big body to kind of do some damage. So I'm with you on that. I think one thing Will Tighe does better than Larry Donnell, he does actually do something after the catch.
He does, absolutely.
So he'll catch the football, and he's ready to make a move. He'll make a guy miss. Larry Donnell, I don't think he's ever made a guy miss.
One stat I want to throw out there, because you've mentioned drops, Pro Football Focus keeps track of something called drop rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly how they calculate it. I'm sure they just, you know, figure out balls that you should catch and you don't. Beckham right now is 17th worst among receivers at an 8% drop rate. And that's something you did not see from him in his first 2 years in the league.
Well, and it's certainly not something that you would expect to see from a guy who has great hands.
Absolutely not.
You know, and he spends, you know, an unbelievable amount of time making one-handed catches in practice, in pre-games. And for somebody that is so vaunted for his great hands and his playmaking ability to have any drops, really. You know, I mean, Larry Fitzgerald went through a span where I don't think he had a single drop in the entire season. So when you compare that to how many drops Odell has this season, you know, that to me, that's a red flag. And I think – you know, sometimes you see it around the NFL right now. Receivers are getting caught up in this one-handed grab. And it's like, you know what? The one-handed grab, yeah, that's cool, and it's great for social media, and it's great for YouTube. But the reality is when you can use two hands, you're going to increase your chances of catching the football. So go ahead and use them both.
And by the way, that is still – it's a pretty small percentage. I mean, basically the way Pro Football Focus broke it down is that he has had 24 catchable balls thrown his way with two drops. So that's how they get to 8%. That's their numbers. I don't know if this is updated through last night's games or not.
I don't think it is because I can think off the top of my head. He had two drops last night, and he had two drops. He had a drop against the Saints because right after he dropped that ball, they went to Victor Cruz on that game-winning drive. So, yeah, that must not be included.
It might not be
Monday
updated
night.
Through last
yeah.
night. You might be right about that. Because I think, he has 37 targets, and I think if you include last night's game, he has more than 37 targets.
Yeah.
So 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the busy phones and say, what's up? To, as I get my caller sheet back up, Victor in Texas. Victor, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? Appreciate you taking
Long
my call.
Long time
John.
No speak, Victor.
Sean,
how are
nice
you?
Nice to hear your voice. Appreciate you. Hey, I'm going to hit all three phases really quick. I don't want to stay too long.
Yes, sir.
Special teams for me, it has to stop becoming a liability. Fumbling. Brad Wing, I don't know why he kicked that ball into the end zone when we could have pinned him back. You got to angle that punt. You got to, you know, you got to flip the field position there.
Brad Wing's been pretty good. I'm not going to get on Brad Wing.
Hey, he could have done better, Sean, for real. I'm not going to get on too much, but he could have done a little bit better. Offensively, Sean, I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit with Eli Manning. And I think you can't blame Eli Manning, but you can't absolve him either. There's a lot of passes he had that was overthrown. I think he underthrew Odell Beckham. It didn't help that Beckham tried to make a one-handed catch either. But if you're bringing up a stat of him getting the ball out so quickly, there has to be a reason for it. It's not just scheme, and that's the offensive line. I watched Weston Richburg get blown up a lot in the center of the line, and I don't think Bobby Hart's ready. And if you look at the technique on Flowers, he can't handle speed rushers. He grabs, he holds. His technique is not up to par. And defensively, and this is my last point, defensively, $200 million we spent on these guys, they're not available. DRC, not available. And I think it's because of the snaps as well, or it's a confidence thing with Steve Spagnuolo that he doesn't have those reserves in. Where's Owe? Where's Owe Diggazoo at? There's a lot of guys on the defensive line. JPP, OV, who's earning his money, he's playing tough, love him. And Snacks, all these guys, they're playing 90% of the defensive snaps. No wonder they're tired. They can't get to the quarterback because they've been playing so many snaps. You got to give these other guys a chance, man. Put them out there, Spags. And I just think moving forward, we got a big, big task coming up. I mean, the running game needs to be better. Hopefully we get Jennings back. But I want you to talk about the offensive line, Sean. Tell me what is going on with the offensive line and why isn't it not playing up to par. And I appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Thank you, Victor. Appreciate it.
Yeah, all right. Victor covered a lot there. To his question about the O-line. You know, listen, one of the things that the toughest thing to do in the NFL is to pass block. And this offense, I mean, they're in shotgun the entire game. I don't know how many snaps Eli actually took from underneath.
Does that help or hurt an offensive line being in shotgun?
It makes you less aggressive.
Okay.
And I think when you look at their run plays are draws. They'll pull John Jerry to the left. You rarely see this offensive line get a chance to just really grind out defenses. There's not a fullback on the roster. So last year they had Nikita Whitlock. They could bring him in, bring the tight ends in, and go power football. It didn't always work out that well, but they run more 11 personnel than any other team in the NFL right now. So they're not even bringing the second tight end out. They're basically one tight end. I mean, a case in point is they go down on the goal line, they stay in their three wides. They don't bring – there is no goal line personnel. I have yet to see it. Third and one, okay? To your point, third and one, they run a trap play, and Linville Joseph and the other defensive tackles, I think it's Steven Johnson, they blew up. Richburg got pushed back.
Yeah, I think Tom Johnson, right, if I'm not mistaken, something
S. Johnson or something. Yeah.
I think it's Tom Johnson,
And they lose 3 yards on a third and one. Which to me, there's no excuse for that whatsoever.
There's a team meeting in the backfield on that play,
and it's because they run the football out of shotgun.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of like lead draws. I mean, like simple. No.
Well, I mean,
power
it was a lead draw.
Plays.
That's what Larry Donnell got knocked out on when Anthony Barr ran through him like a freight train. But this offensive line is basically a pass blocking O line, and they're a work in progress. You know, I'm with you on Eric Flowers. He's got a lot of flaws. He's got a lot of talent, but he struggles with the speed rushers. Every 320-pound tackle in the NFL struggles with speed. But I thought Bobby Hart actually held his own. Linville Joseph, he won the battle against Weston Richburg.
You know what, though? And he wasn't loud about it, though. It's not like you heard Linval Joseph's name brought up a lot during that game.
He controlled the line of scrimmage.
Okay,
that's
fair.
Which is what he's paid to do. Now, the crazy thing is the Giants could have paid him and kept him. So to see Linville Joseph doing damage – is almost like a double wound for Giants fans because you let him walk out the door. He was a second-round pick. The same thing happened with Barry Cofield. And so now you have to go out and pay a guy named Damon Harrison because you didn't pay Linville Joseph. That part of it, I think, is it's got to be frustrating to watch. But I think the fact that this offensive line doesn't really ever get a chance to just mash defense. They don't get a chance to run downhill and just really push the pile. I think that makes them more passive and less aggressive.
All right, I got three calls. We started 5 minutes late, so we'll go 5 minutes late. I'll get you your full hour of Sean O'Hara. Don't worry about it. Let's go to
sure, they're begging.
Oh, they are in line. Let's go to Robin in Atlanta. You're up next, Robin. What's up?
Atlanta.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing, man?
Well.
I just got a couple quick things I want to talk about.
Bring it.
On the last drive before halftime, did that look like a horse collar to you guys when with Odell Beckham when he had caught that pass?
I did not see anything, Robin. I did not see anything during the game that I thought constituted a horse tackle. I haven't had a chance to look at the tape yet. I know Sean hasn't yet either, because the game ended so late. But I did not notice that. I will take a look at it if I have a chance to look at the tape this week.
All right, and then I'm tired of this losing, man. I'm pretty much fed up with this 6-10 season. It's looking like it's going to be another 6-10 season.
Oh, Robin, don't jump off the bridge, man. You started 2-0. You lost to maybe what might be the best team in the NFC and the Vikings on the road in their building. There's no crime there.
Yeah.
You lost a tough division game to the Redskins. You beat Drew Brees, and you beat the Dallas Cowboys in their building. Look, is losing 2 in a row hurt? Sure. But let's not talk about 6-10 here, all right? You still have all your weapons on offense. Yeah, your defense is banged up now. These aren't season-ending injuries that Thompson, Cromartie, and Eli Apple have. They're going to come back. Let's not start rolling out 6-10 again after 4 games. Let's not go nuts here.
Okay, and then one other thing, too, about Odell Beckham. I think he is, you know, I love his passion and stuff, how he had the passion for the game, but you need to kind of, you know, control his emotion and stuff a little better. And I think the, like, the fame for him is kind of getting too much for him now, because, you know, for the past 2 years, you know, he's been doing a lot of stuff, man. He's been going places, doing commercials, doing a lot of stuff. So I think the fame is kind of, you know, a little too much for him. And he's going to have to cool it down a little bit, man.
Thank you, Robin. Appreciate the call. No problem. And it's funny, America loves to do two things.
Yeah.
America loves to build people up. And the only thing America likes better than building people up is tearing people down.
Knocking them down. Yeah, I think, to his point, I think Odell, he does need to just put your head down and just go to work. And, you know, it's not about trying to be a star. It's about just going out and playing ball.
Being a good, solid, fundamentally sound football player.
Now, as much as everybody's hammering Odell Beckham for his antics, you know, there is good and bad with Odell, and you know, one of the things that I saw, you know, before the game, he goes down and he shakes every single hand of all the servicemen and military personnel that is there in that game. Now it's an away game; it's not even like it's a home game, but you know, he takes the time to go and do that and to say thank you.
And Alex Mormez, by the way, actually had him one-on-one after the game, real quick, Sean, and he talked. He said, you know, Odell, why did you decide to do that? He goes, well, you know, everyone's doing these protests. You know, they're kneeling for the anthem. And, you know, he didn't give an opinion on that. But he said, look, I just wanted to make sure that the servicemen understood that they were appreciated. And I wanted to shake each one of their hands, which he did. There were probably 50 guys there holding those stars for the national anthem. He shook everyone's hand, said hello, and said thank you to them. And you're right. That's something a lot of people didn't notice, but he did do it.
It's a great gesture. And it also might explain why his hands were tired during the game. But I think for Odell Beckham, you want people to be talking about you for all the right reasons.
Right.
And the bottom line is, for the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about him for all the wrong reasons. To me, that's something that he can easily correct by going out and balling out, having a big game, and helping your team win instead of creating penalties, creating distraction and drama. He wants to get back to that, I'm sure.
I always say this whenever fans call up and complain about certain things, which I think are kind of superfluous issues that really aren't big in the long run and aren't, you know, huge impact things that really affect the football game. And my answer is always simple. Winning solves everything.
It is the universal solvent.
Wins.
You know what? And here's the other thing, too, is it's always interesting, too, because, you know, you look at a team like the Washington Redskins. They start out 0-2. And they come up here to play the Giants, and everybody's writing them off. Oh, my gosh, they're done. Kirk Cousins is a bust. Jay Gruden's going to get fired. Well, they just won 2 games. Mm-hmm. Now they're 2-2. There's a totally different feeling down in their locker room right now, in their building. But yet they're 2-2. The Giants are 2-2. But the Giants fans are getting talked off the ledge here by Schmelk, because the last 2 weeks have been losses. So it's all about perspective. You know, I know in 2007 we started out 0-2, and everybody wanted to fire Tom. They thought Eli was a bust.
Spags was a mess at D.C.
Spags was a train wreck. You know, our defense couldn't stop anybody. Mm-hmm. We ended up winning 6 games straight. So you can get hot. You can get streaky. This team has done that in the past. I understand the concerns. But to your point, you're 2-2. It's a lot better than 0-4. If we were 0-4, I think we were singing a different tune. But the great thing about the Giants, when you look going forward, a lot of these wounds are self-inflicted.
That's the thing, absolutely.
And I think that's what you – if you're a Giants fan right now and you're reading that Don't Jump book, the one thing you can hang it on is they're 2-2, and they're one of the worst teams in the NFL right now in turnover differential. John told you already, they don't have a single takeaway on defense, and they've turned the ball over 9 times, I want to say.
I believe that's correct, yes.
So there's one takeaway, and it was on special teams. So they've got 9 turnovers. They're minus 8,
yep.
And yet they're 2-2. So if you just clean that up in itself, it's a totally different team.
And you know what? The reason I said before, success is the ultimate solvent. If Odell catches that long pass against Josh Norman early in that Panther game last year, that whole game's different.
Totally.
And if
game.
He has yeah. 2 long touchdowns in the second half against the Vikings, does one Giant fan give a damn about his 115-yard unsportsmanlike
right.
in the first half?
Right.
Nobody cares. So go out there, and you know what? We talked about how good the Packer offense is. Guess what? They're the 31st, I think 29th or 31st ranked pass defense in the league. Odell's going to have shots next week to make some plays.
Yeah.
Go out there and make some plays. Everyone's going to forget about all this stuff. Nobody's going to care. 201-939-4513. 2 calls before we say goodbye. David in North Carolina. David, you're up first.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, Dave?
I don't know where to start, but appreciate the insight. O'Hara making some great points, especially about the formations. I don't believe I've ever seen a team just constantly come out in the same formation, but I will say this. I mean, you can't say the offensive line has done a good job. Because, Sean, I mean, back me up on this. Every team we've played is playing that same defensive front with 6-7 men in the box. And I agree we're not lining up any power sets. But, I mean, we're spreading it out. And teams are just saying, I don't think you can get 4 yards a clip 3 straight plays. I mean, if you get 4 yards a clip, you're going to get a first down. And they're just laughing at us. Linebackers are playing deep, unless they're bluffing the A-gap blitz, which John Gruden acted like Mike Zimmer invented that, and it seems like that's been the recipe for the disaster the last few years against Eli is his kryptonite, that A-gap blitz. I mean, teams just love to bring that A-gap blitz because I think he probably does a really good job of recognizing the safety and DB blitzes, and so they're just going to take their chances, you know, coming right up the gut. But you can't say the offensive line is playing well or played well last night when teams are just daring us to run. And I can tell Eli's constantly checking into run fits to try to counter that. And then, you know, we still can't run the ball. My other complaint is, yes, we've had some self-inflicted penalties, but, I mean, my goodness, let's overcome it. I mean, is it the end of the world every single drive because there's a holding? I mean, look at the game against the Falcons and Panthers. One time it was 1st and 20, they hit Julio on a bomb for 20 yards. One time it was 3rd and 17, they hit Julio for a deep post. I mean, we act like if one penalty, one holding call, the whole drive is in the toilet because this team, it's 4 yards, 5 yards at best, no matter if it's a run or pass play. I mean, there's no explosive play happening in this offense right now.
All right, David.
So, I mean, every mistake's just magnified.
Thank you, pal. And you know what? Yeah. You're right. I don't think there are enough explosive plays.
No, there certainly aren't. And you know what? It's going to be hard to have explosive plays when teams are giving you that kind of coverage. And when they're playing back, they're daring you to run. And to your point, I as an offensive lineman would love the fact that they're giving me a 6-man box because I would say let's run it all day long. Now, I don't think the Giants offensive line is the greatest O-line in the NFL right now. I'm with you on that. They're a work in progress in my mind. But they're a function of the system that they're in. And they're not calling the plays. It's not up to them. Now, I could run by the offensive coordinator every time I run over the sidelines and say, run the damn ball as many times as I want.
And, you know, it's not even the offensive coordinator in this case. It would be the head coach.
It's the head coach. Yeah, so you're biting the hand that feeds you, so to speak. But when you look at the offensive line, they were effective in the run game. In the first half, Orleans Darkwa averaged 5 yards a carry. He had 8 carries for 40 yards.
That's
this
good.
Is your third string running back. So the run game was effective in the first half. Had the game been closer, I think they would have probably gone back to it more often. But the thing with that is you've got to be able to continue drives. And when you look at the drive scenario, it's 3-and-out punt. It's 5 plays punt. And to your point, the penalties, when you're not a big play offense and you're not doing a great job with that, yeah, those penalties kill you because now you're really – you're methodically moving down the field. You're trying to put together a 10 to 12 play drive, and you're averaging 4 or 5 yards of carry on a run. Then you have a short throw. That's how this offense is designed. This offense is designed to move the chains, not to have all these huge explosive offensive plays. And the penalties kill you when that is your mindset offensively. I'm sure this offensive line is frustrated because they had to feel like, wow, we've got a lot of room to run the football here. And they just had to get away from it because of what the game dictated.
Right.
But when you look at the stats from the first half, they ran the ball rather well with Orleans Darkwell, who I thought did a good job getting north-south. He's a vertical runner. He doesn't dance around. They don't run a lot of different run plays, which, you know, it makes it easier for defenses to figure out and to defend.
And I'll do some quick math. 12 for 54 overall in the first half. They finished 18 for 78. So that means in the second half they ran the ball only 6 times. For 24 yards. So 4 yards a carry, but only 6 attempts. And by the way, they ran the ball well against Washington, too, in that game, 21 carries for 120 yards. So teams are daring the Giants to run it. They are running it, but they aren't dominating the game with the run.
And I think, you know, you're doing it without Rashad Jennings, without Shane Vereen.
Correct.
So now it's, you know, things got a little tough.
And without Marshall Newhouse, for that matter.
Yeah, no Newhouse. I'll say this. Paul Perkins looked pretty good.
He's elusive. He makes some guys miss.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see him get a little more run if Jennings can't go.
And here's what we call a tease, by the way. If you go to Giants.com later on today, you might see this guy breaking down Paul Perkins' screen pass.
Oh.
Just saying. You might see
inside
that a little bit later on today.
Maybe?
Absolutely. Mark in Chicago. Mark, let's wrap up. Mark, did I meet you this weekend?
Yeah, we met it before the Washington game. Thanks
That's right.
for taking the time.
Nah,
I mean, during
no
the middle of the show, I really appreciate
nah,
it.
Happy
it was a pleasure meeting you.
Yes.
So, anyway, I just wanted to talk about our coaching in general. I mean, there were so many points today that were made that are so valid that were in my mind. I just think we're getting out-coached in a lot of ways on offense, defense, and special teams. You brought up one point about the bunch formation. We never run that. I remember Chris Collinsworth talking about that on a game last year. On defense, we don't put OV and JPP on the same side. I saw it one time last week at Washington. There was a penalty. They never went back to it. These are the little things I think that we could do that could create some opportunities. One thing they did do that was creative last night was that screen play to Perkins. He was lined up on the left side. He caught the screen pass on the right side and went 67 yards. So I think we're just getting out-coached. And one of the things that Anita brought up, and she's not here to defend herself, but she was saying all summer, third year in the Ben McAdoo offense, how great it's going to be. I'm thinking this is the third year for people to catch up to us.
Now, Mark, in fairness,
I think we're starting to see that.
Now, Mark, in fairness, Anita's not the only person that said that. Everyone thought third year in the offensive system, you should be continuing to improve. That's not something just Anita has said. Everyone, and frankly, logically so, has made that point as well.
Yeah, and when you look coming into this season, you know, given that they spent a lot of money on the defense, you know, even and I was thinking, wow. They had the sixth-ranked scoring offense last year. They're averaging 26 points
a game.
They'll
be fine.
They're going to score points. You know, Eli's going to find a way to do that. He did that without Victor Cruz and without Sterling Shepard last year.
They did it with Reuben Randall as a number two. By the way, wasn't good enough to be on an NFL team this year.
Yeah, he's not even on a team. So I think, you know, I'm shocked at this offense not being able to produce. To your point, I would be frustrated if I was on this offense as a player because, you know, yeah, I like the no huddle aspect, but it also, it really kind of, it handcuffs you as far as what you can do offensively. When you're going no huddle, you're keeping the same guys out there. You're very vanilla. I think that you've got to get a little more creative and you've got to try to find a way to make the defense play on their heels. I don't think the Giants offense has really taken over games like they possibly could. That's something that's certainly frustrating. And I think for McAdoo, you know, he's got to find a way to get Sterling Shepard more involved early, get Odell Beckham involved early on in the game. Don't let those guys get frustrated and feel like they've got to try to win it with one big throw.
All right, Mark, we got to run, pal, all right?
All right, we'll call back later on this week.
Hey,
thanks.
Pleasure meeting you, Mark. Thanks so much. Sean, good times.
Yeah, good stuff. It's always tough after a loss, but, you know, I think we talked to a couple people out of their freezer.
And, I think so.
You know, we talked them off the ledge. But, you know, I think for the Giants, this is a big week. You know, I think one of the things as a player, I used to always get a little extra jazzed up for a national game. Now, they played on Monday Night Football. Everybody got to see how poorly they played. rarely do you get a chance the following week to go back on national, you know, on the national game of the week and have a chance to vindicate yourself for a poor performance.
So
but
you
they
think
have just that.
Practice a little bit more juiced up this week?
It better be. You know, and I think if I'm Ben McAdoo, I'm going to challenge my team. And you know what? I mentioned the accountability factor. This is when your veteran leaders – look, everybody, we can blame Ben McAdoo. And all, the reality is, in the NFL, it's about the players.
Yes, it is.
And until the players in that locker room take control and say, this is our team, and it's got to be the veteran guys because the young guys think that they're going to play 10 years in the league. They don't really have a sense of urgency. It's up to the guys like Olivier Vernon, who I think has been a great leader, JPP. It's up to those guys on defense, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, to grab everybody and say, hey, we're not going to let this get away from us. We're not going to let it slip through our fingers. Offensively, obviously, Eli's a leader, but you know, they need some other guys to kind of grab a hold of the locker room and take ownership. And I think as a coach, when you see your players doing that, then you know, all right, we're right where we need to be, and I don't have to jump in to the fray and start creating sparks. But I'm sure, you know, McAdoo, the tough thing is they play Monday night. So do I put the pads on? Do I not put the pads on? This team needs to be more physical. The bottom line with this team, they're not as physical as they should be up front on offense. And defensively, when you can't get to the quarterback, you're not playing physical enough. That's the one thing that I think you've got to try to figure out. How do we play more physical on Sunday night? And do I put the pads on Wednesday or Thursday, or do I take them off and make sure they're fresh?
And the final thing I'll say, and this goes back to what you said about players taking ownership, you're talking about more in practice and during the week. I want to see players take ownership on the field on Monday night or Sunday night, whenever the game is, and just make a play. How many times this year have we seen a guy go out there and just make a hell of a play? You had Jonathan Hankins block the punt. Hell of a play.
Yeah.
You had Sterling Shepard go up in the corner and beat the Cowboy corner of the ball. Hell of a play. The Paul Perkins screen pass. Hell of a play. Is that about it? Victor Cruz against the Saints on the sideline.
Yeah.
Hell of a play.
Too far or a few between.
We don't have enough of them. And last year, this was a frame that I kept making the Giant fans, is that somebody eventually on defense has to go out there and make a play and stem the tide and stop the waterfall. Somebody has to make a play. But last year, frankly, at times, I don't think they had the players talented enough to make those types of plays. I think they have those players this year that are talented enough to make those plays, and nobody has stepped up and made enough of those game-changing plays on either side of the ball now to make a difference in what's been three – and, you know, the Viking game was one score in the fourth quarter, three or four pretty close games.
Yeah, I think for the Giants' offense, they are a better offense on paper than they were last year. And Eli threw 35 touchdown passes.
More talented, absolutely.
So there's got to be some frustration in there. And I think, you know, the good news and the bad news is it's a short week. So it's both sides of the coin this week because as a player, you can't wait to get back out there and get that bad taste out of your mouth.
Speaking of short week, we're still trying to figure out who's going to host Big Blue Kickoff tomorrow. So when I know, I'll let you know. So make sure you tune in tomorrow at noon for somebody sitting at this desk, and they'll take your calls and talk some Giants football. For Sean O'Hara, I'm John Schmall. Thank you so much for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com, everybody. Have a great day.